It's 1:47 a.m. in Scituate, Massachusetts, and you're listening to Night Call. In Los Angeles, I'm Tess Lynch, and with me are
Molly Lambert
and Emily Yoshida in New York.
I also wanted to mention that if you have any thoughts, questions, rants, ramblings, etc., you can drop us a line at 24046NIGHT or email us at nightcallpodcast@gmail.com.
Leave us your night call.
You can call during the day.
Or night.
It's or allowed. Night. It's all fine.
It's always
you
night.
You can do whatever you want to do. So this week we wanted to start by talking about, which now feels like all things in our modern era, like it took place 5 years ago. But we wanted to just devote a little bit of time to Elon Musk's obnoxious space adventure.
Elon Musk's space car.
He launched one of his Tesla cars into orbit around our planet, which is Earth, for those of you who aren't sure about that. and I feel like there was a lot, and because of this image of the car orbiting the Earth and the guy in it, like it just feels like that was the stunt. But people are trying to insist that it was actually like a more significant rocket launch for other rocket related reasons.
It was like
I'm not really sure what those are.
They launched like three things at once. And that was one of them.
What were the others?
Right. The others are like a regular SpaceX rocket and a couple of, I think one of them didn't work, or maybe that was the last one. But people get very mad when you criticize SpaceX.
Oh yeah, you can't.
People get so, nobody to use a bro-ism or like a obnoxious troll-ism, like nobody capes for Elon Musk like the worst bros on the internet. He is their damn soul, and they are always coming to his rescue to make sure that nobody says anything mean about their boy.
Because they're dreaming that one day they'll be able to afford hair plugs and be able to launch a car into space. Right?
Yeah. Ouch.
Yeah. Everybody.
Burn.
I mean, who doesn't want that? I saw some, I think because I was searching for stuff about the rocket and I Twitter searched Elon Musk, and, you know, people are always doing like quote pictures, like a picture of him with some, you know, apparently brilliant quote that he said. And I'm totally paraphrasing, but it was like some story that he was telling about how, like, when I was a child, I was afraid of the dark until I realized that, like, the dark is just an absence of photons and there's no reason to be scared of an absence of photons, which is just like, if that's who you want to be in your life, it's like, that's like the most boring future. Like, it's just the most like absent of poetry interpretation of events or something. And to like laud
like
that as being
the opposite
brilliant.
Of like a Carl Sagan quote.
You're exactly.
Like,
yes.
Wow.
Exactly.
This makes me feel like I'm watching paint dry.
Yeah. It's like, oh, did you know that the universe and the cosmos are actually more inert than you previously suspected? Great. It's all controllable and you can, you know, probably monetize all of it.
Yeah, exactly. You're the god of space and everything is under your control with your giant stupid brain.
Yeah. And your stupid rocket that you keep dicking into space.
What would be like an exciting thing? You know, what would be a better thing than a car to launch into space to get your attention?
A boat.
Do you remember a while ago? Yeah. There was I wrote about this at Grantland. I remember that the chiptune band Anamanaguchi put a piece of pizza into orbit with a camera. Is like a while ago. It's actually kind of mesmerizing footage. It's just like on a weather balloon, so it's not really a rocket launch, but they still had that kind of curved Earth view with a piece of pizza floating.
And a pizza.
A pizza pizza. that was pretty, that got my attention. But Molly, you pointed out very accurately that this is like a very 50s, like the whole image of the car in space is very 50s, like 80s, 50s.
Well,
the
it's
80s
very weird that they're simultaneously trying to get us into driverless cars and then also being like a driverless car in space.
The messaging is very mixed.
It's very mixed. I think there is also like there are certain people. There's like a Seinfeld episode where George Costanza is like, we were promised flying cars. Why don't we have flying cars yet? And I don't think I want flying cars that much. That's basically like drones that people can ride in.
Well, we were also just saying, as if driving's not kind of hard enough. I mean, it's already quite dangerous, in case you haven't. So it's like, well, let's take two dangerous things and combine them into a fantasy of like road rage in the air with like all these drones, like, you know, you're dodging drones like there's squirrels on the road all of a sudden.
I will also say that my boyfriend got kicked off Twitter recently for an old tweet he had where he said, I hope Elon Musk gets murdered by a driverless car. Got him booted off Twitter.
Seriously?
For like a, yeah.
Wait, that, and it was an old tweet?
Yeah, it was like some Elon Musk head found
unearthed a muskrat.
And I was like, wait, you can't do jokes like that on Twitter? Like, that doesn't even seem harsh to me. Is that weird?
Like, yeah, the language thing is so murky. Like, I think you can't say, like, I'm going to kill Elon Musk with a flying car, an automatic flying car. Please don't edit out that thing that I just said. So it just says that. I don't know. The saying I hope thing. I have no idea.
Well, it's also like that other driverless car guy did get killed by a driverless car, which is why.
Who?
There was like a billionaire who's like was all into driverless cars, and he like took the first ride on a driverless car, and he was like watching Harry Potter in the back seat and got like crushed by a truck.
Whoa.
So that is why I am afraid of driverless cars, is that being like, oh, just trust the technology seems like a very. Not something I'm going to do, you know?
But it's like all photons. Sorry.
It's just the absence of photons, you guys.
Don't be scared.
Emily,
we can logic
talking,
our way out of it.
Emily, you were talking about the end of Greece, that this was your immediate go-to?
Oh, yeah, there's like five things that this is echoing. And you mentioned Back to the Future, which obviously, like, you know, the flying DeLorean. I feel like the Tesla is basically like the teen's answer to the DeLorean.
Yeah,
like,
except a DeLorean's so much cooler than a Tesla. Yeah.
There's a DeLorean that drives around our neighborhood, kind of like halfway between Molly's and my houses, and I have been known to follow the DeLorean.
Oh, they're so great.
Because you know it's going to the past.
Out of time.
It doesn't need roads. But no, what was the other thing? Okay, so there's that. There's, oh yeah, the end of Repo Man, where they don't go into space, but like there is an alien that's like in the car and they just fly over Los Angeles in a car. I think it's like it's a Malibu. It's like an old Malibu. And that's a great iconic ending. And then the end of Grease, which I don't know how you guys forgot. This is like one of the only things I remember about
now
Greece.
Now that you say it, I can picture it, but I never thought about it as like that they're in a car flying away.
Yeah, they're like at the fair and they're doing the hand jive or whatever. Everybody's doing it and they get in their car and they drive off into the sunset, except they drive into the sun, rather the sunset, apparently, because they like lift off from Earth and everybody back on the ground is waving up at them like they're dying or something.
I have no memory of this at all.
I think what Emily is saying is that the movie Grease entirely takes place in like a San Junipero simulation of the 50s and 60s, where
that
everyone's
would make
actually
it
an
all
alien.
Make more sense. Yes.
It would, because everybody acts really weird in that movie.
Yeah, everybody just looks like this is what teenagers are. Like,
this is what 35-year-olds dressed as teenagers from an old time look like and behave like.
Oh, also, that now if I'm doing word association or ending of things association, then it's also quoted in the video for It's Oh So Quiet, but without a car. Bjork just levitates above the ensemble of dancers.
I mean, sending Bjork into space would be way cooler.
She came from space already. You're just returning her.
She's just going
where
home.
She's from.
Bjork, go home.
I think that's the thing, is like, it's not even that we're against a car in space. It's just like, what an uncool car to send into space. You know, it's such a branding exercise.
Well,
like,
what car would you send into space?
Well, I was hoping you'd ask. I would send like a beautiful, like, Lowrider is what I would like to see in space. I think there's actually a comic about lowriders in space.
Really?
Yeah. But that, you know, like a beautiful space age car with fins.
Like wings. Yeah, fins. Yeah.
Because it could go faster into space with the fins.
Because it would look
cool. It's not how space works.
Because it would be a cool image. You know, I'm not such a fun killer, although obviously I'm
That'll
like,
just
like,
remind me of the credits for Third stuff. Rock from the Sun then.
Oh, yeah. That is also true. Maybe, I think we just all have this dream of there being like a car, an old timey car in space. And so a Tesla, you're like, oh, what does it do? It gets like good mileage in space. I just find
it's not polluting space.
Yeah. I think they're just such boring looking cars that I don't understand them at all.
They are the Christian Grey of cars.
By the way, I saw that movie and it was amazing. And it was like a long car commercial. There was a whole scene that was about driving a car fast. Tess, what car would you like to send into space?
Oh, well, I'm glad. I would probably send like a Volkswagen thing or something. You know, it would have to be like the strangest car so that if aliens were watching, they'd be like, whoa, like that's what everyone drives on Earth. And then they would imagine us as being hippies from the 60s. But, you know, maybe to them that would seem innovative. I don't know. I mean, I have a VW bus. Yeah, like a bus or like, I mean, honestly, like a Winnebago. You should send like an RV into space and then they would just think that that's where we live. We're just
I can totally see it with like a satellite dish on its roof and everything.
Exactly.
We're going to have to send RVs into space soon anyway because we're going to run out of Earth.
Yeah.
I wouldn't send a car at all. I wouldn't send a car at all, guys. I would send public transportation.
Oh, a space bus?
Space bus.
Or a space train.
Or a space bullet train.
Yeah.
Space subway.
The Acela Express already looks like it came from space.
Yeah.
Just send it right back. Yeah. It's really like streamlined.
I like that's your a good guys. Train. What about like an old timey bicycle in space? One of those ones with the big wheel, a velocipede. Space velocipede. I also saw the best meme I saw about this was just like, hey, you know what's cooler than a car in space is recognizing your workers' attempts to unionize.
Yeah.
So funny.
Because Elon Musk won't do that.
Also, there was I think I sent you guys, there was an article in maybe Jalopnik about a man, a rich guy who was boasting on Instagram. He was like, I'm going to paint my Aston Martin with moon dust, actual moon dust. I've got a piece of moon rock. They're making it into dust. They're going to paint the car. And
who's they?
Yeah, exactly. So I guess the writer of this article was like, I am going to investigate because it's illegal. Like all of the moon rocks are accounted for, I guess. And an ounce of moon rock is $1.5 million. And he would need at least 3 ounces of moon rock to make enough dust to cover his car.
Maybe he meant moon rocks like the weed.
Yeah.
Isn't there a type of weed that's like pure THC that's called moon rocks?
I wouldn't know, but yes, there is. But I think it's actually just like resin from any kind of weed that's like, you know, little hash crystals or something.
I mean, if you paint your car with hash crystals, you're probably going to feel like you're in space. Is what I'd say. I thought you were going to tell me about a different thing that I also read about, which was that guy who built his own rocket. This guy, Mike Hughes. Do you know what I'm talking about, anyone?
No.
There's a guy whose name is Mad Mike Hughes. That's what he goes by. And he keeps doing these publicity stunts where he builds his own rockets and he says he's going to launch them. And some people I follow on Instagram went to the launch, which was like in the desert somewhere.
Oh my God.
And everybody was commenting on this guy's Facebook page, like, you're going to die. You're going to die in this self-made rocket. And like, you're an idiot. And he was like, whatever, I'm going to be in space and you're not. So like, check it out. And the rocket launch was not successful, but
no way.
But he didn't die.
Huh.
He is alive still.
So
he can try again.
Yeah.
How big are these rockets? So they're big enough to hold him.
This looked like what I remember the filmmakers of Apollo 13 referring to as a vomit comet.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Poetic.
Like the method they use for getting zero grav in movies.
And just like the first rockets that were just like big enough for
tin
like
cans.
A person. Yeah. They're tin cans and they like go up and come back down. Hopefully they come back down. As we talked about.
Depending on
last
who's
week.
In them. Don't ban me from Twitter.
I think what bothers me about Elon Musk is like, don't privatize space.
Yeah.
All these billionaires already trying to privatize all the beaches. You can't have space. Give me space. Yeah. That's my beach. My space beach.
Yeah, why is it that I'm so much like more into like, you know, pouring money into a space program if it's actually like a government funded space program than a private one, even though both are maybe not our top priorities right now.
Because we're laying the groundwork for when we all have to leave Earth and only the rich people get to.
Yeah.
Like in the Martian Chronicles.
Also, yeah. Of course, there's no reason. We've never been given any reasons to mistrust billionaires who want to take things and for themselves and ruin them.
Like, yeah. I mean, all these Silicon Valley guys just seem like they're such Bond villains, you know, like the way that they conduct themselves and brand themselves. I'm like, don't they realize how scary they are coming off? And it's like, no, they don't, because they have no self-awareness.
Yeah.
Because they think being like photons, the absence of photons is a relatable.
Then again, in defense of that, though, I mean, I would hate if I became a super rich and famous person and people were like memeing all my thoughts. Because they, what if they just chose? I mean, if you just are pulling things.
That wasn't like, my best.
Yeah.
Also, if there was like a crazy lady, we'd maybe be more into it.
Oh,
if it was
sure.
Like, if there was like a lady Elon
Well, if
Musk.
Barbara Corcoran were like, I'm going to go, you know, with all of my Shark Tank entrepreneurs and colonize space, I'd be like, maybe Barbara.
Maybe. I'm fine with all the rich people being the first in space as long as they go first. You know?
Yeah. You know? Wink, wink. We know.
Sorry, speaking, I stepped on your segue.
Go for it. All right. Speaking of millionaires, possibly evil, or what am I talking about? Millionaires. Speaking of billionaires, possibly evil, the evil variety. This is a little bit late, but we had a hot group chat about this. Stemming from the death of the founder of IKEA, whose name I'm going to find in like 2 seconds.
Oh, I thought you were going from evil billionaire straight to the Olympics.
Oh, well, we could do either.
Let's talk about grocery stores first.
This and is IKEA.
This is the hot content everyone's been waiting for from Night Call.
Right.
It's for us to talk about the apocryphal Nazi origins of IKEA.
Oh,
and
I just
Trader
found the,
Joe's.
Yeah. I just found the best. I just found the best factoid. Okay.
Read the factoid.
So speaking of billionaires, the possibly evil or maybe very definitely evil variety, this is a little bit late, but we had a discussion about this a couple weeks ago and felt like we needed to take it to the pod. Starting with the death of Ingvar Kamprad, the founder of IKEA. One of the richest men in the world. He died at age 92. Yeah, he looked to be very old. And around his death, people brought up the fact that had been reported, I think, a few years prior, that he had been in like a Nazi youth program as a kid. And then also, I mean, had been like vocally supportive of Nazi policies all the way up to like two or 3 years before the founding of IKEA, which was like in the 40s. IKEA's been around for a really long time.
Whoa.
Yeah, it's sort of wild. And I did not know about this before this was brought up. I missed it the first time around. And it made me... I had been spending a lot of time at IKEA that week because I was working on a project that required me to pick up some stuff there and, you know, just sort of marvel. And I always like, whether it's like IKEA or Disneyland, like really big places where they have a kind of protocol for how you go through it. And it's been really, you can tell it's really been managed down to like every single step you take.
Yeah.
So I always find that interesting at IKEA, like how they landed on this particular system. There's a way to go through IKEA that makes your life easy, and there's a way to go through it that makes your life miserable. And they definitely want you to choose the former.
Answer to the question being fascism is not a huge surprise, I guess.
No, not at all. But you know, it's sort of. I actually think a lot of people have like an allergic reaction to IKEA, and I find it somewhat calming. So that makes me worry about myself.
Yeah.
Doesn't everybody find fascism calming? That's the whole, it's what's scary about it.
Right.
Everybody likes being told like what to do and where to go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's also something about, you know, the IKEA experience of like, you're in and you're going to have to eat there. Like having the cafeteria with all of the reminders of the cafeteria, but then in the cafeteria, there's like the one thing you get, you know, cause I've tried a few different things from IKEA, but it's like, you're really going to get the meatballs with jam on them, which seems like such an odd thing to like watch a ton of people eating meat with jam in the middle of the day in a huge shopping center. But you're like, this is the experience I'm supposed to have.
Stuff like that, too, actually also does freak me out about the idea of space colonies, because like as soon as I get in there, I want out. you know, I'm like, even if they put everything, I feel the same way about like big airports and like casinos. Mm-hmm. It's like, even if they put everything I could possibly need, including like greenery inside of a indoor space, it's still, I have to get out, you know?
Yeah.
I loved the IKEA in LA in Burbank. And then they moved to a larger giant building and I hate the new one.
Wait, they did?
Yeah,
where's the new one?
They moved across the street.
They moved to a made-up street called IKEA Street. and it's like just this giant, scary monolith that like you have.
Most IKEAs are on IKEA ways or IKEA streets or something. Yeah. It's like how Apple is on like one infinite loop. It's just such an enormous thing. They have to build their own street for it.
Well, I realized that the only reason I really liked going to IKEA was because I could then like trick people into hanging out at the weird dead Burbank mall next to it and like go to like Old Town Burbank. Although Burbank is weirdly a alt-right hotbed.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, it's like the center of where alt-right people are in LA. There's like some alt-right podcasters or something, which I'm like, oh, you know, that weird kind of 50s quality.
Yeah.
You know who likes that?
Yeah.
There's a lot of I have friends who live in Burbank who are not alt-right and they claim that it's getting more progressive. But there is a kind of like Mayberry vibe where your neighbor, like one of my friends who lives in Burbank was received a letter that she had been tattled on for like the fact that her sprinklers partially sprinkled the sidewalk and not all of the water landed on the greenery. So she was wasting water, but it's like, you know, she had done xeriscaping. Like she's so anxious about not being like, you know, just having this appearance of being conscious person.
It's a scary suburbs.
It's a scary suburb.
Everyone's watching each other all the time.
But there's a lot of those in LA.
And it's also like so defined by the presence of Disney, I feel.
Right. Disney and IKEA. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And IKEA. Disney and IKEA, the twin pillars of Burbank. Also, I feel like, I mean, it is like, because it is that 50s suburb that is in the Los Angeles area, it also becomes the 50s suburb of the mind because it is like it has been immortalized in that way, like, you know, from everything from like Edward Scissorhands and so it feels, you know, weirdly like if you're going there, if you're attracted to some idea of IKEA, it's both what IKEA actually is and also what it is on screen.
Well, Burbank also has that weird quality of kind of going up, it's like flat and then it ends in a mountain, so it kind of looks like you're on a soundstage, and IKEA is very close to
it
that
has
mountain.
A backdrop. Yeah,
it's very Truman Show.
It is very Truman Show.
It very is like, oh,
well, Truman Burbank, that was his last name.
Exactly, there we go.
Guys, we're solving a mystery.
So we when we were talking about Mr. Comprad and IKEA and the weirdness, the both, you know, somewhat comforting and also troubling experience of going to IKEA, then we also found that he wasn't the only possible Nazi alleged. I think we have to keep these as alleged.
Yeah.
For some people that owns an empire with a presence in America. And somewhat heartbreakingly, we saw the, it's still like a, it's not, I feel like it's not, well, whatever. Somebody want to talk about Trader Joe's?
Yeah. So Trader Joe's was started by Joe Colomb, I'm not pronouncing it right, in California, but then it was purchased by one of a pair of German brothers in 1979 who had started Aldi supermarkets and then had split into Aldi Nord and Aldi Süd after they argued about whether or not to sell cigarettes. So I guess Theo Albrecht bought Trader Joe's, and from Wikipedia, I think. During World War II, Theodore was conscripted into the Wehrmacht, where he served with Rommel's Afrika Korps in an army division.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also side note, not having to do with him having served in, you know, with the Nazis, but he was also kidnapped, apparently, and held for 17 days at gunpoint. So he was really, really, he got really reclusive. Like, the whole family became very private and very reclusive. So I think it became harder to discern if he how he felt about, you know, his past, which makes it even more mysterious.
I mean, have you all ever been to an Aldi? Have you ever?
No.
Oh, my God. Well, Aldi is like totally, Aldi is like, you know how everything is just so cheap at IKEA, especially the food stuff. And it's like, I feel like I'm in another country right now, because it's just like the numbers are not even computing to me as being anywhere near correct. Like, I shouldn't be able to have a plate of meatballs for $3 or whatever it is. That's sort of how Aldi is. Aldi is like so dirt cheap. And that's like why they were successful, is that they managed to be cheaper than anybody else by a wide margin.
That's how Trader Joe's is too. It's cheaper than every other grocery store. Although, having worked there, the reason I was given as to why that was true is because they like own their own transport trucks. Mm. And part of everything being the Trader Joe's brand is because they don't have to pay for someone to like transport from whatever company to Trader Joe's, which is why they claim regular grocery stores have such high prices, because they have to buy like the name brand. Yeah,
there's
products.
No middleman.
Mm-hmm. But
well, what do you know? What? Now that you have experience from the inside working at Trader Joe's, does this revelation make anything make sense to you?
Well, again, I think there's a weird sort of, I mean, an unforeseen connection between 1950s tiki culture and Nazis, as we all learned when the Nazis.
That was like the sixth thing I would have expected you to bring up. That's
well, remember
amazing.
How the Nazis did when they did their scary march?
Torches.
Tiki torches.
Was there a connection with tiki torches before then?
No, but I mean, this is what I've learned about Burbank, is like, people who are very nostalgic for the 50s are generally into white power, because there's like this weird, you know, like the past of the mind that they're all into, that they're like, things used to be great and then like modernity ruined everything. So like, you know, there's like kind of rockabilly overlap with white power stuff in Orange County.
Yeah.
So finding out there was a connection to Nazism and Trader Joe's was maybe not as surprising, although I had assumed that it was just founded by some guy into tiki stuff, which it was.
But then he sold it.
He sold it.
Yeah. To the Nazis who came knocking. But I mean, it was also interesting in our group chat, because there was something negative to find about every grocery store.
That's what we found out.
We were like, are there any that are safe? I mean, there's kind, because there was a big dust up a few years ago with a natural food store out here, Lassen's. And I know we were all pretty bummed that Lassen's was pro Prop 8, because they are run by Mormons. And they faced a big backlash over that.
They're pro-life.
Yeah, I don't know.
Well,
they
gave money. They gave they donated to the Prop 8 campaign.
Yeah,
yeah, the family did. You will notice, if the Southern California residents will notice that Lassen's is closed on Sundays.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I did not know that.
For the Lord,
weird. Yeah. But yeah, looking into sort of all the grocery stores, it's not super surprising that a lot of them are really exploitative. And
they're all like union busting and like nasty in that way. I mean, also, but this is the thing that I grapple with, is that I feel like the former Nazi who owned Trader Joe's is no longer with us. He is dead. I think his son now owns it. Because they're so reclusive, we have no idea how his son feels about his father's legacy or anything. But like, I feel like on a business level today, like, Trader Joe's is actually one of the like less awful places you can shop at.
Oh yeah.
It's great. And I was surprised, because I told my dad, I was like, oh, did you know that Trader Joe's was owned by this guy who's a Nazi? And he was a little bit more like open-minded about it than I would have thought, as we are descendants of Holocaust survivors and not survivors, where he was like, you know, everyone in Germany of a certain age, he was like, they were conscripted into the army.
Exactly.
So like, it doesn't necessarily mean that they
No, and that's true, because also this was a few years ago, this was discussed on a bunch of Yelp boards, which I looked into, and people were like, oh, did you know that they were Nazis? And some of the responses were like, well, their father worked in a mine and their mom ran a grocery store and they were really poor. And they were like, oh, we have to learn how to run a grocery store so we don't end up working in the mines and dying. And then they were conscripted. So it's not like they were like super jazzed to join the Nazis. Like, we don't know.
We don't know.
Yeah.
We don't know.
The IKEA guy, on the other hand, I think we have more evidence that he was super into it. Like, well, he was a...
There was a book by Elizabeth Asbrink. Yeah. He said, at one point he said that quote, it was youthful stupidity and the greatest mistake of his life. But the woman who wrote the book, Elizabeth Asbrink, said that he actively recruited people, that he was, you know, involved for a long time. So it seems like a bit of a more active thing. But at the same time, IKEA is so much cheaper than everything. I just want it to not be true.
Well, we knew IKEA was evil for other reasons, which is that they like H&M and these other kind of like manufacturing
fast
companies
anything.
Where you're like, how is it so cheap? Is that they like throw everything away rather than like give it to people who could use it, which I still don't even understand why they do that. And that was also something, I think that's just a grocery store policy. Like, you throw out a lot of food at grocery stores that has just gone bad or, like, you know, could still be eaten technically. And you, like, have to throw it out even
That
though,
stuff drives me crazy. And that's actually
like,
one of the things.
Look at all this food.
Yeah. And that's one of the things that Trader Joe's is actually, like, really good with, is that they do not do the thing that all of the bigger mainstream grocery stores do, where they buy like a huge pile of food just so you can have the image of a wall of food when you walk in and be like reassured in the idea that you live in a land of plenty. Like, Trader Joe's runs out of things a lot, especially in Silver Lake.
They do. And then they push other things in front. That's our secret method.
Right.
If you want to get the newest stuff at Trader Joe's, go to all the way to the back of the row. That's my insider tip. Like, in the vegetables, it'll have, like, the stuff that expires soonest will be at the front.
I think that's usually most grocery stores, isn't it?
the founder, I don't know what the title is, but he runs, like, a kind of, like, produce thrift store in some inner city neighborhoods where people can access fresh produce for, like, an affordable price. That's run by Trader Joe's. I think it's called Daily Table. I mean, like, that stuff I think is really good and, like, addresses a big problem that nobody talks about, which is, like, how much food is going to waste when so many people don't have enough to eat in the world. And
yeah, I mean, also when I worked there, there were, like, career people there. There were a lot of people who were working there who were trying to, like, do creative stuff and it was their day job. But there were also a lot of people who just worked at Trader Joe's and that was their living. And if you work there long enough, I don't know if this is still true, but, like, you could get a decent healthcare, I believe. So in other ways, it seemed like it was better for workers than
like
other
Ralph's
grocery stores.
Or something. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Ralph's, which is known, well known for union busting. There's a great post. I think it's on the, no, I won't remember. There's a great post about the origins of Ralph's that I love, about just sort of the invention of the American, specifically the Californian grocery store with the big pile of oranges and all that stuff.
Oh, yeah.
I love thinking about stuff like that.
It's like Whitman-ish.
Yeah. Speaking of evil empires that provide pleasure to people.
When are we not talking about evil empires on Night Call?
We were going to talk about the Winter Olympics for a moment.
Yeah, man.
Emily?
We have an intrapod debate because as some of you may know, Molly, and I mean, I think we're all supportive, but Molly especially is like really leading the no Olympics in LA charge. And just, you know, kind of highlight, I think you've been doing a lot of really good work highlighting all the ways in which Olympics usually fuck over the cities that they take place in and are really bad for homeless populations and the environment and a bazillion other things, and mostly just exist to make rich people rich with construction and stuff like that. On the other hand, figure skating is so great.
I mean, that's the thing, is like, we're not anti figure skating. We're not anti sports.
And there are other places to watch figure skating that aren't the Olympics.
I mean, we wish that the problem with the Olympics too is the idea that these like lesser known sports, and especially like sports featuring female athletes that get featured during the Olympics and no other time.
Yeah.
It's like, we could show those on TV more anyway. We just don't. We only focus on the big male dominated sports leagues.
I mean, like, so, before the Olympics started, I was like, Molly, I know, like, I don't want to, you know, detract from the cause, but like, I have to watch figure skating. So I've been trying not to watch the other sports, but then like, they'll do the thing where they're, you know, they show a block of figure skating and then they'll switch over to show the downhill skiing that's happening at the same time. And it's true. Like, there are like female skiers that are just, it makes me so happy to watch like these, like, really talented women like do something incredible and superhuman, like go down a hill super fast and be so tough in a way that you never get to see from sports, on especially not on television any other time of the year. And so I'm very pulled in two directions right now.
Look, it's okay to watch the Olympics. It's not, we're not like, you know, it's not a full, like, you can't enjoy any of this. We acknowledge that it's pleasurable, because again, there's a lot of stuff about fascism that's really seductive, and that's why people like these things. It's more the, like, the interstitial segments where they do the propaganda segments about, like, this athlete overcame so much, you know, so many things to come to the Olympics, and now if they're great, it's going to be the greatest moment of their life. And, you know, those athletes do not get paid well. Most of them are like, you know, they don't pay for them to come to the Olympics. They have to pay for it themselves, or the team has to pay.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not against an international sports competition. I'm just pro disbanding the IOC.
Right.
Completely.
Well, it's awful.
Overhauling the way that the Olympics happen, and being a Debbie Downer who tells people stuff about, like, did you know that beautiful ski run they raised an ancient forest in Korea for?
Yeah.
Because they did.
Yeah. By the way.
It sucks. I mean,
but I love figure skating.
Yeah. And I think that one fun thing about figure skating this year is that we are now living in a post Yuri on Ice figure skating world. And there has already been at least one performance or one skate by a pair from Japan done to music from Yuri on Ice. Yuri on Ice is an anime show from Japan about ice skaters, about male ice skaters, and it is the best.
Male ice skaters and homoeroticism, and it's,
yeah, it's
delightful.
A deeply homoerotic show about beautiful men who can do triple axels and quads and also like to hug, and it's great.
Was this the skating moment that made you cry?
I teared up for that pair skate, which wasn't even that great of a pair skate, but the music that they did it to is like this, it's like not the theme song of the show, but it's the skate that Yuri, the title character, does is his freestyle skate when he's going working his way up to the worlds. And it is so, it's the piano theme. It's so beautiful. It makes you just like want to root for whoever you're watching while they're skating to it, because it's just like so gentle and just like sounds like trying really. It just is the sound of like trying really hard and like the triumph of the human spirit or something.
I'm just glad people have moved away from like only skating to the same thing. I feel like everybody's
well.
Skates to, like,
there was already a Swan Lake.
Yeah, like skate to Skrillex. I'm into that.
Well, what would you skate to?
Ooh, good
question. It's just such a good question.
Well, Tess, first I wanted to say you're probably the only one of us who actually played winter sports.
Oh my god.
When are you?
Oh my god, you had to out her.
No. I don't know if you could even say I played winter sports. I think I was played by winter sports. I was I went to a school briefly for 3 years where sports were a very important part of the curriculum, and it was in addition to you know, PE, we had mandatory team sports. I literally shuddered.
Yeah.
I shuddered.
I also shuddered when you said mandatory team sports.
It was honestly, I was just talking about whether or not to sign one of my kids up for basketball, and I remembered I had anxiety-induced eczema playing yeah, on the insides of my elbows playing basketball. And that was not even my least favorite sport I had to play there. But yeah, I did co-ed ice hockey.
That sounds when I was in miserable. That sounds
so awful.
That also seems really cruel to do to prepubescent.
It was so cruel. And I was telling, I was talking with my husband about this, and I was like, you know, when I ever think about, like, could I go to war, I remember what it was like to be, like, suited up with all of this protective gear and the mouth guard. Like, I could never get the hang of the mouth guard. And I think I molded it wrong. Like, you dunk it in the hot water and you do the whole thing. But I always felt like I was gagging on the mouth guard. I was, like, fat. So I also had, like, a lot of padding. And then you just see all these people with this objective of, like, they have the objective to win and you don't have the same objective because you're just so overwhelmed and, like, they come at you.
You're just trying to survive.
You're just trying to survive. And I mean, yeah, I would hide out and try and, like, skate, you know, lace my skates forever, which actually was, like, kind of also hard to do.
Oh, yeah, that was my softball strategy because I was always stuck in right field. So I would be spend a lot of time, like, drawing pictures with my cleats in the dirt.
Yeah.
I, like, wanted to be good at sports. I just was not.
You were, no, but you did okay.
No,
right?
I did not do. I mean, not as good as I wanted to be, considering that my grandmother was, like, a Olympic level athlete, which more on that in a future pod, maybe. But, you know, I was like, oh, I've got these good athletic genes. And then I was like, no, I'm, like, 3 feet tall and, like, can't do anything but maybe, like, gymnastics.
Emily, what did you play?
I played some softball. That was it. I didn't play anything officially or competitively after seventh grade. I would play tennis sometimes because I lived by the school and I was by the tennis courts, and so I could. But I was not good at it. It was just a thing to do.
Who would have thought that three unathletic, cool kids would grow up to be writers with a podcast?
Oh, who would have thought?
Who would have thought? To be three brains in a jar. Well, before we wrap up figure skating, I just want to say that, well, okay, so there's already been a bunch of skating to Moulin Rouge. There was an ice dance to a Moulin Rouge medley.
Shudder.
That had a lot of people talking because it was very spicy and very touchy. And they were Canadian, of course. And then there, Adam Rippon, who's kind of like the big, he's not necessarily the like most, the biggest hope for a medal from the men's, which is more exciting this year, I have to say. Like, the men's skating on the American side is more exciting this year. But because he got like fourth place at nationals, but then got sent to the American team anyway. And he's the one who's been really outspoken about like Mike Pence and stuff. He refused to meet with Mike Pence because he's gay and he's openly gay. And he's like, really just like, I want nothing to do with our vice president. So there have been a lot of really good like quotes from him for that. He had like kind of a disaster. I'm sorry. Am I showing how much I've been paying attention to ice skating right now?
No, we forgive you.
No, but he
check out NoOlympicsLA.com.
But he had, so this has nothing to do with the Olympics. He did have like a really bad, like kind of heartbreaking skate, or like he made a lot of mistakes at the nationals, but then got in anyway and skated for the team event at the Olympics. And he skated to Coldplay and it kind
what
of
song?
Made me cry. I don't know the
what song.
I don't know the song. It was a song with a really long instrumental part for the first half. And he
it
was just
like
he was like the
song.
Best I've seen him on any like YouTube clip that I've ever watched. And he was just like, the performance just made me like so happy for him because he's just like having a moment right now and is very like, just like the kind of person that you want to have like on a mic at the Olympics because they're gonna like say something about like fuck this administration. So
look, Emily, once Elon Musk outfits us all with our robot skeletons that make us super strong, we'll all be able to ice skate and do triple axels.
And we won't need the IOC. We'll just do it on our own time.
We'll be ice skating in space.
Yeah.
I think there's been just a lot of ice skating media recently. So I think that there's been renewed enthusiasm for it.
It sounds like you also have a Google alert for ice skating.
Oh, well, no, I just follow some podcasts and I saw iTanya, which is not very good. But the ice skating scenes in iTanya are amazing. And I have a whole spiel now about how, wow, like, look what we can do with digital effects now. We should be making more ice skating movies. where you can like map a face onto a skater and make it look like really cinematic and realistic, because we can do that now. Instead, all we use VFX for are like car crashes and explosions still and space battles. We could have like 10 ice skating movies every year.
Oh, a live action Yuri on Ice.
We could actually have all of these things. We could have car crashes and skating and explosions.
No, I don't need to, I don't mean to leave out explosions.
That sounds like the best movie
it
ever.
It does, doesn't it?
I had an ice skating birthday party once as a child.
I got invited to one.
During the 80s craze for ice skating rinks in malls, which is how Tonya Harding got into ice skating.
You didn't have it at the Culver City rink?
No, there was a mall. There was a ice skating rink in the Laurel Plaza Mall, which got destroyed by the earthquake, the Northridge earthquake, and has been just kind of a pile of bones ever since. I loved that ice skating rink. I loved that whole mall with its Orange Julius.
Let's go to the Culver rink next time we're all in LA.
Guys, I would love to.
That'd be great.
We're going to make Tess play ice hockey.
I just shrank back. I was like, oh, I don't know. I'll just drive the Zamboni.
Oh, I love the Zamboni. Oh, a space Zamboni. That's the end of this episode.
That's what we should send in
a space. That's it. I agree. That's perfect.
So I think we're going to turn it over to one of our night call listener questions. If you also have a question or a thought in your head for us to answer, you can give us a call at 240-46-NIGHT. It doesn't have to be at night. And we will try and get to your question on the air. Okay, so looks like today we have a question about Paddington 2 loosely.
Hey, what's up, Nighties? Calling because I want to reopen that Paddington 2 bag. I don't want to leave that closed. There's too much to talk about. This movie rules too hard. So I have voice blindness. It's not a real thing, but I can't really tell people apart on podcasts till like the 13th episode. So my apologies. I don't remember who exactly said this. But they mentioned how before they saw Paddington 2 that they saw a bevy of terrible trailers, as did I. I had the very same experience where I counted 5 trailers that had extended fart jokes as a part of their advertising for all these kids' movies. Before I saw the film, I was just so angry. But then after I saw Paddington, I just felt so sad that kids' movies feel like they have to do this. They have to appeal to the cheapest part of being a kid. I know I can make my 7-year-old nephew laugh by just going, "Hey, farts." And he will laugh because that's the level of humor he's at. But it just made me sad that so many kids' films don't try. So why? Why don't you think more kids' films try? Is it just that it works? Like, why aren't kids' films more, like, experimental and fun? I think that's what I really appreciate about Paddington 2 is, like, it reminded me of my favorite kids' movies, like Mary Poppins and Willy Wonka, where, like, the world doesn't make sense because who cares? It's a kids' movie, so let's just explore and have fun and do crazy things and break the laws of physics and reality because it's a kids' movie. Who cares? Let's have fun. Why don't you think more kids' films do that? Why are they so rigidly structured like a Pixar film or rely on so much really awful base level humor? I'm just curious why you think that is. All right. Love the show already, guys. Looking forward to more. Bye.
Well, I think we kind of maybe undermined whatever we're about to say next because I know that I laughed when he just said farts. But that was a great call. Thank you. Was that Colin? What was his name?
I don't know if that person identified themselves, maybe because they knew that they would be stalked by us.
We can call them Paddington.
Yeah. Well, that was a great call from our Paddington lover 69. yeah, I don't know. I would be interested to know what Tess thinks of this, having young people to entertain in your life. And
so many children. Well, I do have to say that in defense of fart jokes, as if they needed defending, I was having a hard time coming up with TV shows to watch with my kids. And I found a show called All Hail King Julian that is a spinoff show for Madagascar. And there was one episode that won me over where King Julian's a lemur and he is the king of all of these lemurs in Madagascar, obviously. And they're all kind of like, you know, just a motley crew. They can't really get anything done. And at some point they discover coffee, which King Julian brands as a brown Julian. And they all start drinking coffee and they're all really productive in the kingdom. And then they all start just like zonking out and falling asleep on, you know, falling out of trees. But it was, I was like, this is so good because it's clearly addressing parents' need for coffee and how we all are like exactly like these lemurs where we're like, we're so productive. And then by the time we're watching this with our kids, we're like, oh, just a shell of a human. But I mean, I think people are very protective of the media their children consume. I mean, I think, Emily, you may have been the one to send me something about the, you know, YouTube, the like there was an article about how. The YouTube videos where it takes all these familiar characters to kids and then it's kind of just assembled by algorithm and they're really violent.
Like, yeah.
So just I think that there's something of like you trust Pixar to not fuck your kids up that way. And so hence the rigid structure, which is also obviously geared toward merchandising. But yeah, I mean, when I was a kid, like I was definitely watching like Bedknobs and Broomsticks, like the more kind of absurdist children's movies. And now it's I haven't seen Paddington 2 yet.
It's very Bedknobs and Broomsticks. Well, there's I think there's like a scene with some knight armor that I thought, oh, this is just like Bedknobs and Broomsticks. No wonder I like it. That movie is the best.
It is the best. And especially, I mean, honestly, Home Alone, I watched with my kids not long ago. And I was like, Home Alone's so good because it takes a fantasy of not of, you know, having the house to yourself and like nobody to tell you what to do. And then it turns it into a nightmare and then it kind of redeems it. But it goes through all of these iterations of exploring, like when a kid is thinking about this objective and then like all of the different ways it can play out. I loved Home Alone.
I was the kid who was put off by the violence.
Yeah, no, I was too. I was about to say that. Yeah. Like I had to review. It was very interesting to come from Paddington 2 to reviewing Peter Rabbit this past week because they deceptively seem like things that would be very similar, very British, like a CGI, a cute CGI animal interacting with human characters. But like you really see the difference between two kind of, I guess, approaches to children's material. And so much of Peter Rabbit is about how he's just like bashing Domhnall Gleeson over the head and electrocuting him at one point, like in multiple points, electrocuting him. And it's like so violent. And I think if I was a kid, I would just be really stressed out by it because it's just about him getting bashed around.
Well, dude, have you read the books recently? Because the books are so macabre.
They're very macabre. Yeah. But they're
the
not
The thing
like,
is like, well, his mom's a widow because his dad was baked in a pie by Mr. McGregor. And then Benjamin Bunny, who's like his cousin in the Benjamin Bunny book, there's a whole scene where he gets beaten with a switch.
Yeah.
And I had my old copy and I was like, I will read you this before bed. And I was just like, excuse me, I'm so sorry. There's a bunny beating another bunny.
I mean, I think that like good kids things have a little darkness in them always. Yeah. And like
Maurice Sendak's books and stuff. Yeah.
Bad kid things treat kids like idiots and are condescending. And then sometimes, like I'm thinking of DreamWorks movies specifically, are like, you know, treat kids like idiots and then like wink at the adults being like,
right,
hey, we know you're here too. Like, that's why Angelina Jolie is the shark, which I also hate.
Yeah. I think that one of the trailers that he's referring to, and maybe you saw this before Paddington 2, Molly, was the Teen Titans Go to the Movies trailer, which has a really, really long fart joke in it. And I saw that before Peter Rabbit. And I was just like, ugh, this sucks. Like,
I hated all the trailers up to and very much including the Wes Anderson Island of Dogs trailer, which made me angry in a different way. Yeah. You know?
Wait, tell me about the Island of Dogs
trailer. We have a whole different
podcast.
We'll
do a whole episode about it because it's like, it manages to be like stupid and racist seeming and twee, just everything I hate in a movie.
We're gonna go in on it. Sorry to all you Wes Anderson stans, but we're gonna torch.
We're coming
dogs.
From the island. Oh,
made me mad. It's a stop motion movie, but for some reason, I'm also now thinking about the trailer I saw before 50 Shades Freed, which was
also a children's movie.
Also a children's movie. Although they omitted the part from the final book where the baby kicks inside Anastasia and she says the baby likes sex too.
Ugh. Oh my God, what?
They didn't put that part in the movie. Oh my God, the books are such a nightmare. but there was a long trailer for a movie that made me angry because it's a movie called Blockers. With a rooster at the front because it's like cock blockers, but like they can't say cock for some reason. And it was like the whole trailer was just a lead up to a really long joke about John Cena, the wrestler, who I guess is an actor now, butt chugging. And I was also like, who thinks this is that funny? Like, it's maybe, I don't know, just like the way the joke was set up and executed. I was like, it's not that this couldn't be funny, but just like how they're doing it is so like, this is what we think a comedy is like.
Yeah.
So I think, you know.
You know what was a really good kids movie, but not in its entirety, but just like a slice of it, was Flight of the Navigator when he's just dealing with the creatures in the jars on the ship, you know?
I don't think I've ever seen that one.
It's pretty janky. Sarah Jessica Parker's in it in a bit role. But like, I remember if I could isolate like something that I would want to expand on for a movie, it's a kid on a spaceship just like rocking out to the Beach Boys and playing with little finger puppets that are supposed to represent extraterrestrial life.
I like how all of your only child fantasies were about like, I'm a child, but I'm an adult now.
Yeah. I'm still living that life.
Well, thank you for the call, Paddington. Yeah, great call. Great question. And if you have a question or a musing or a theory or a conspiracy theory, you can leave it for us at 1-240-46-NIGHT or email us at nightcallpodcast@gmail.com and we will address it. I think that does our show this week.
We have to drive off into the cosmos now.
Yeah, we gotta drive our classic car into space.
It's a Zamboni now.
Yeah. It's a Zamboni.
And we're doing the hand jive.
Yep.
Into space.
I knew it would end this way.
Well,
all right. We'll see everybody next week.